So to introduce Dr. Gaines for our Economic Outlook Conference today, Gary Miller of Bryan, Texas Utilities, the General Manager.
Thank you.
Good morning. BTU is proud to be a sponsor of the session this morning. Dr. Jim Gaines is a research economist and at the Real Estate Center at Texas A&M University. The center focuses on housing and land development issues. And prior to Texas A&M, Dr. Gaines spent 16 years with KPMG and Arthur Andersen providing real estate consulting services. Dr. Gaines also served as president of the Rice Center, an urban research center affiliated with Rice University. Dr. Gaines has a bachelor's and a master's in real estate from the University of Georgia, and a doctorate in real estate and finance also from the University of Georgia. Dr. Gaines has authored numerous papers and articles and technical reports covering a wide variety of real estate topics and analysis. In total, Dr. Gaines has more than 35 years experience in a broad array of professional activities, primarily in research and education and urban economics, land use analysis and development, and project risk assessment. Dr. Gaines has worked extensively with major corporations, developers, investors, financial institutions, and government agencies across the country. Please help me in welcoming Dr. Gaines.
Thank you. Howdy.
Howdy.
Well, here we are again. Isn't it just fun? And I do appreciate you inviting me back. I can't imagine how you can be such gluttons for punishment as have to listen to me all the time. And, you know, In the introduction, I was also a professor for 12 years in a prior life. So I thought this year, you know, having the university affiliation, that I'd start you out with a little bit of an academic lesson in a vocabulary word, liquidity. And maybe you're not aware of the new definition, that liquidity is now when you look at your retirement funds and wet your pants. I know as business people you're all concerned with that issue of liquidity, so be careful with it. You may discover it's something that you're not quite used to. I went out to West Texas and found a sign to indicate how our economy is going. You know, this is the 100,000-foot view. I'm going to talk about a bunch of stuff. I'm going to talk about the national economy. I'm going to talk about the local economy, the state. We're going to talk a little bit about demographics and population growth, and then we're going to talk about the real estate market, the housing market, nationally, statewide, and here in College Station. So, yeah, you're going to have to bear with me because it'll go fast. Everybody will get a copy of the slides if you want them. I think you've already been provided, and if you really need a copy, let the chamber know or let me know over at the center, and we can make it available. So you don't really need those two pencils if you don't want to. The economy, believe it or not, is actually trying to recover. It's doing its doggonest to try and recover and see if it can't come, but it's just kind of been slow going. It's been a reach. And I thought, you know, we'd start out this morning and talk about, well, after the cliff, right? We were all hanging on the edge right up until, well, January 2nd, actually. We went past the deadline. We went past the 11th hour and 59th minute, and then we got something called, and don't you love the way the politicians do this, the American Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012. As a taxpayer, do you feel relief? I didn't think so. But you probably got more relief than you would have without the act. So we did okay. Instead of going full head tilt over this cliff that we were looking at there, in December and January, what we did is we just had sort of a little road bump hit, and as usual, the politicians pushed things out and kicked the can on down the road, although they did do a few things. For example, the AMT got indexed, which was a big deal. If you're not aware of it, that alternative minimum tax issue was a big deal that was going to hit a lot of people until they indexed the levels, the capital gains taxes, estate taxes. If you're in that unfortunate position to be earning $500,000 or so a year, yeah, you're going to pay a little higher tax rate. Boy, isn't that a tough problem to have. And the tax cuts from the 2002-2003 era, the so-called Bush era tax cuts, are now law. They don't have to be renewed every year. Those are now been put in there. So we got through all of those impending kinds of disasters on the tax front. We still have a few things coming up. It's real interesting too, because you're gonna get bombarded on this, because it all comes to a head about the Ides of March, about the middle of March. So like Caesar, we need to beware the Ides of March. But we've got things called the debt ceiling. We're already technically over the debt ceiling, but because of some accounting games they can do at the government level, we can still borrow and still fund all of the spending. So that's going on. But the debt ceiling is coming up, and they got to vote on it again. They're going to have to raise the debt ceiling some more. And as you know, that's gotten to be quite a political hot potato. We got this sequestering. That was the issue of trying to cut back spending. And we're going to sequester, and it's an automatic cutback that comes into play in March. It was postponed out to March. And then we have to see what's going to go on there. Those are some scheduled spending cuts that could come. And the estimates are that if those cuts happen in full tilt boogie, that's economics for they do the whole thing. If we do the full tilt boogie, we'll probably lose somewhere between 50 to 100 basis points off of GDP. That's a half to 1% off GDP. That's a pretty big hit, because right now the government is spending so much money that the economy kind of relies on it to keep spending that money to keep going. And then the entitlement spending. If you're not aware how the federal budget works, all of the tax revenue and all of the other revenue that the United States government takes in pays for all of the entitlement spending, all the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, unemployment, all of the entitlement programs. All of the discretionary programs, military and all the other non-military discretionary spending, that's what we have to borrow the money to pay for. It's dollar for dollar, it's about what it is. It's about one-third of the budget is the discretionary spending, and that's about what we're borrowing is $1.3, $1.4, $1.2 trillion every year, and it roughly covers all the discretionary spending. So everybody's looking at the entitlement spending. What are we going to do with it? We've made promises over the last 40, 50 years, especially to us baby boomers, that they can't make. We don't have an actuarially sound Social Security system. The Medicaid and Medicare, since that was the topic of the day, the spending is going hand and foot higher. And quite frankly, we just don't have the revenue to pay for it. So here's where you are. That's kind of what's going on. So watch the Ides of March. That's what I can't tell you exactly what's going to happen. Well, I can tell you some. They're going to raise the debt ceiling. That's a duh. They don't have much choice. The sequestering spending, they'll play around with that, do some politicking. The entitlement spending will just keep going, because right now none of the politicians have. They just can't stop it, and they can't do anything else about it. So they're going to have to keep it going. So we'll hear about that. All right. So how do we look going into 2013? Lucky 13. Got to be 13 at least every 100 years. Got to think about that one for a minute. All right, household and business spending, as I've told you before, you know, spending is everything in our economy. 72% of our GDP is based on personal consumption expenditure. That's everybody going out and spending money. How are people spending? Well, households and businesses are spending. It's still a little slow, but quite frankly, in the past year or so, it's picking back up a little bit. Americans, households particularly, have paid off debt or had it foreclosed on them or had it written off one way or the other. We're not as much as households in debt as we used to be. We actually have borrowing capacity again across the board. Now, nobody's lending us any money, but we have the borrowing capacity to do it. Businesses have borrowing capacity. In fact, businesses are sitting on a whole treasure chest of capital. Rough estimate of close to $2 trillion of cash and near cash assets on the corporate balance sheets that is not getting spent. So the money is there. It's just not going. Unemployment remains high. We did avoid this cliff. The unemployment's issue, if you've been watching the Fed, what they did in December, the Fed has said they're going to keep the interest rates low, but they've pegged it now, not to a time period, but they've pegged it to a level of unemployment and level of inflation. They'll accept a level of inflation of somewhere around 2%, maybe even slightly better, but they'll peg the interest rate and won't let the interest rate start coming back up until unemployment is down to 6.5% or less. That's the first time the Fed's ever done something like that, where they've tied the interest rates to a specific economic performance and measure. We're nowhere near 6.5%. The effect of this is probably that it'll still be low interest rates for a year and a half at the most. Home construction housing have improved dramatically. You're going to hear, I've got more on that for you later. I'm the housing economist. You know you're going to have to hear that. So yeah, that's doing well. The question is it enough? Tight lending is going to continue to be the rule of the day. It may loosen up a little bit, but I do not anticipate, and nobody else is anticipating, that the lending is really going to loosen up all that much. As long as it's good, we're back to those good old days, as long as you can go in and convince the lender you really don't need to borrow the money, then they'll lend it to you. The state and local governments are still hurting, and College Station is a prime example of that. When I get around to showing you some of the local numbers here, it has finally caught up with us in terms of the state budgeting and the impact on the university and on our local community of what's happening. Local governments, city, county, school districts, and so forth around the state and around the country are still having to tighten belts. They're still having to fight the downturn in revenue that comes from lower property taxes, lower sales taxes, and the like. Regulatory uncertainty. We're still a society and a civilization of high regulation. We've had a number of bills. I think something this morning was discussed, you know, with health care and Obamacare and all that stuff. I know it was part of the discussion. You heard about it. It's still, nobody really knows what all the rules are. That's the problem. I mean, some of it is going to probably be very good, but some of it is still so uncertain with the rules. We still got the Dodd-Frank Act that's been out there with the regulators, with the banking and financial systems. Dodd-Frank required something like 250 to 300 new rules and regulations to be written by, at the time, an agency that didn't exist. It now exists. The Consumer Finance Protection Board now exists. They are issuing rules and they came out in December with two new rules that they hit the banks with. It took 8,000 pages to describe those two new rules. The banks are still trying to read them, much less figure out what they say. So we're still having that. And then we're still plagued a little bit by the general lack of confidence in the direction things are going. But I think that one, I think of all of our problems that we've had the last 5 years in the Great Recession of 2007 that ended in 2009, sort of. That particular issue and that particular problem of confidence, of better expectations of a better tomorrow, that things are getting somewhat better, I think that one we are finally kind of over the hump with. And in fact, I'm going to show you some things about that in just a minute. But it has been an issue. All right. The basic growth measure, GDP, I know you can read all that real well, particularly those of you in the middle here. Third quarter was good. We had a little over 3% growth in GDP after an anemic 1.3 in the second quarter. For the year, we're a little less than 2. Nobody's expecting a really great fourth quarter, but it'll probably be okay. First quarter's going to be a little weird because everybody was gearing up for that fiscal cliff that didn't happen. So things slowed down, and the first quarter at the national level kind of slowed down a little bit. We'll have to see really the second half of this year to see how well we're going to come out of all of this. But you can see it's been kind of done. The expectations, the confidence level. We are trying to recover. I've given you some graphical bench lines here. That orange bar that you see across there is the average score of the Consumer Confidence Index when we're in recession. And you can see how far the how low that index got down in February in 2009, down to a historical low of about 25. It's been gradually coming up, and you can see we have now hit the point where we are confident that we're in recession. We hit 72, which is the average level of the Consumer Confidence Index during periods of downturn or recession. It needs to be, what do we need for it to be? We need for it to be up there closer to that green line. That green line is the average score when we've had good times or expansionary times, and that average score was about 102. So I've given you a relative position here on the Consumer Index. The national debt, this is actual dollars of the growth of the national debt in the red bars that go into down to almost you can't see them. It goes back to 1929. I always found this graph kind of interesting. And just that, especially over on the far right-hand side, you can see how rapidly we have been adding to the national debt the last 4, 5, 6 years. The blue line is the percentage of the deficit each year or debt. That we incur each year as a percentage of GDP. And the interesting thing is, you can see on the far left, back in the 1944, 45, 46 period, it got up over 120%. That was because, of course, we had to pay for this thing called World War II. You heard it. It was in all the papers. And then you can see how we paid off the debt, got it down in terms, especially as a percentage of GDP. And that was also because our economy just exploded during the 50s and 60s and 70s. So that percentage of the GDP went down rapidly. You can see we're rapidly coming back to 100%. And that seems to be a disturbing pattern, that we are allowing this borrowing and the level of the deficit each year to approach almost our full GDP level. This gets a little dangerous. That's incidentally at 98% where it is right now, is more than Greece. And we hear all the problems of Greece. It's more than Spain. And you hear of all the problems in Spain. We look good by comparison to Japan. Japan's around 200% right now and going higher. They've already announced they're just going to keep borrowing. And they're just going to keep deficit financing, and they're going to borrow their way out of debt. It's a negative Ponzi scheme. You borrow yourself out of debt. Anyway, that's sort of the gist of it. Now, I gave you this slide last year and just updated it. These were all of the recessions. This is my only spaghetti graph. Sorry about that. These are all the recessions since World War II. In terms of the percent job losses from when the recession started, all the job losses, and then how long did it take? It's a time chart. How long did it take to recover all those jobs that we lost in each recession? You see the bottom red line? That's the current one. That's the Great Recession of 2007. We're still about 3 years away from getting back to the zero line. I mean, it was that economic oxymoron of having a jobless recovery. You have to think about that. Only a politician or an economist could come up with a term like that, because it makes no sense whatsoever. But nevertheless, that's what we've had, is this jobless recovery. Now, I've got good news for you. We're in Texas. Texas has more than recovered. This same type of chart, it's a little different scale, but it's the same chart. This is Texas's employment. We're already 2.5% above where we were. We had peaked back in 2008 at 10.64 million jobs. We're already over 10.8, and probably when we get this month, we'll be over 10.9, right at 11 million jobs. We've been replacing all those jobs that we lost back in 2009 when we decided to be the good citizens of the world. Everybody else is having a recession, so okay, we had one too. But we've already recovered. That's the good news. Now, I did find a representative picture about the economy from, of all places, TxDOT. You don't really think of TxDOT being that good at describing the economy, but I found this one. You have to look at it for a second. But that's a five sign economic statement. If you get five economists in the room, those are the answers that you get. The old two-handed economist. Anyway, I thought that was representative, and there we are. Hey, Texas is still doing well. Through 2011, our real GDP was still increasing at better than a 3% rate. We don't have the 2012 numbers yet, but you can see the percent growth is the line. The bars show you the actual dollars. Our GDP in Texas it continues to expand and to grow. Our index of leading indicators has bounced back up after the downturn in 2009. It's still going up in the general positive direction of where we're going. Our economy, quite frankly, Texas, is the bellwether state of the nation right now. There are only a couple of other states, a handful of states really, two or three, that are doing as well or better than we are. North Dakota is going through an absolute boom. Wyoming and up through there in Idaho, but who the hell wants to be up there? Of all the other states where anybody actually wants to be, Texas is the bellwether state. We've got better, more job gains. We're gaining jobs. House prices are still very attractive. And incidentally, this past year, we've done very well in terms of increase in house prices. I'll give you some data on that in a minute. But we're still probably one of the most affordable, large, most populous, more populous states in the country for housing. Our general business growth has been great. A good example is here in this room. This is a tremendous crowd representing the business community of this area. And business has been good this year. And population growth. You know, we've got affordable housing. We are creating jobs, which are like magnets for getting people to move here. We've got favorable weather. We've got a favorable tax climate and the best Tex-Mex food you can find anywhere. So people are coming here to Texas. College Station, on the economic front, is kind of a two-headed monster here. We're bucking the state trend just a little bit because we are dominated by state employment. The university's the 900-pound gorilla in the community, of course, that adds to and creates all of the good portion of the economic activity in the area. Our GDP here has been growing as well. You can see it's still been up. A little over 2%, but this is through 2010. The thing about being tied to the state's economy or to the political decisions and to the state budgeting process is there's a lag effect between when state budgets get cut back and when you actually start seeing the impact of those cutbacks. So when the university's budget got stopped or actually shrunk here a couple of years ago, it took a year or two for that to actually show up, if you will, in the statistics and in the economy proper. Annual job growth. This is my only really negative one. You can see how it has affected our local economy in terms of PA being able to grow our employment base because we are so dominated by that government sector. It wasn't until November of last year that the government sector of the economy stopped losing jobs across the state and in our local economy. That was the first month in like 13 or 14 months that the government sector didn't lose, and the private sector wasn't growing fast enough to offset it. It was growing. We were adding private sector jobs, but not quite to the offsetting effects. You can see that we've had some negative job growth. You can see that in 2012, that's the green line. And it's green because we don't have the final year-end numbers, but it's going to look something like this. We're going to be down about 400 or 500 jobs, which actually is almost a break-even, but it's still a slightly negative kind of thing. It's a little less than 1% job decline, and it's all from the government sector, and primarily the state government sector. When we got into it, you can see on a monthly basis, if we track out what monthly job growth has looked like, you can see it's this is another technical economics term. There was a little bit of a hump over, and we humped over. It turned from going in a positive trend direction and turned slightly negative. I think that's going to reverse itself. Now, I think the good news is we should be pretty much through with all that state government job loss. That's the good news. It was a cumulative effect. a delayed effect from the budgeting process. I know the budgeting is going to be difficult. We're in the midst now of our biennial 140 days of hell, or whatever you call it, a state legislature meeting. That's it. And we're not real sure how that's all going to come out, but it doesn't look like that the funding for higher education is necessarily going to be increased that much. The best we might be able to hope for is they don't decrease it anymore. And the university has already sized itself in anticipation of that. That's some of that other effect. The number of people employed, that's the blue line. It's on a 12-month moving average. You can see it's slightly coming down. Now, the irony of the situation is the unemployment rate came down. And you might ask, how the hell do you do that? How do you lose jobs and have fewer people working and lower the unemployment rate? Well, you've got to remember there's a numerator and a denominator in the unemployment rate. What they did is they decided that more people weren't looking for work anymore and took them out of the labor force. So if you are unemployed and not looking for work and actively seeking work, you are definitionally, I think that's a word, you are definitionally no longer unemployed. There it is. And by golly, our unemployment rate is now down to a little around 5%. You know, so we can brag that we're only got 5% unemployed. Maybe. Anyway, gross sales picking back up. This is good news for our local economy and for the local situation, of course. Always want to see these gross sales coming up, both for tax purposes and also just general business academic environment of what's going on. Our population, we're still growing. And incidentally, this is the first time you've seen these numbers. The State Demographer's Office just released in about 6 weeks ago or less, their revised 2012 projections based on the 2010 census. It takes a while to get all that out. But and quite honestly, the projections are a little less than what I've been showing in the past, because during the decade of 2000-2010, we did not grow quite as fast as we did during the decade 1990-2000. We grew something like 22.5% 1990-2000. We grew something like 21.6% in 2000-2010. So it's a little bit less. But nevertheless, the state's going to go from about 25 million to a little better than 45 million by 2040. We're going to add at least 20 million people over the next 30 years. And if you think we've had troubles before, we got them coming. Mainly because we put the fence on the wrong river. We should have put it on the Pecos. Because we're getting all those folks from California. And they're coming. They're coming to this state just as fast as they can come. And they love Austin. And doesn't Austin deserve them? And, of course, North Texas is getting all of the people from Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and New York and New Jersey. And so maybe we needed another, fence along the Red River. I don't know. But anyway, they're coming. Everybody's coming. Incidentally, they're also bringing all of the things that they think the way things ought to be. Right? So if you think Texas is ever going to look like Texas that you knew, loved, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago, ain't happening. You want to know what Texas is going to look like by 2040 or 2030? All you got to do is look at what California looks like right now. That's what we're going to do. And unless we get on top of it, and unless we start doing things and making decisions and planning for all of this growth, and anticipating it and making decisions today that are going to affect the next 30 or 40 years, that's exactly what's going to happen. We are going to be doomed into repeating the history unless we do something to change it. Anyway, that was my soapbox for the morning. Okay, we got all these people coming. We're going to be adding almost 700,000 people a year. almost 2,000 people a day. Our population groups, the Gen Yers are coming in. They're going to dominate, just like the baby boomers for the last 30, 40 years have dominated the economy and the society and everything and the politics. The Gen Yers are coming. They're coming strong in Texas. Already this group that's 16 to 34 years old is 30% of the population. The silent and greatest generation is already going out. The baby boomers are now turning 65. 66, something like 10,000 a day on average, turning 65. It's amazing. And then we got another group out there on the other end, the Gen I, the first generation that's never known the world without the internet. And those two generational groups are extremely technologically savvy, extremely so. They're doing everything. Right now, there's no such thing as dating. You just sit there on your iPad or your iPhone and just text or something. You don't bother with dating. You know, if you want to watch the movie together, you don't pick up your date and take her to the show. You just say, log in to this channel and we'll watch it together on our iPods. It's happening. 2010 to 11, just last year, the last year we have data for, Texas added over 400,000 people. Almost 425,000 people. California added 350. Florida, these were the only ones that added 100,000 or more. Brazos County added 2,000, according to the Census Bureau, between 2010-2011. It was the 30th county in the country. So at a 1.101%. So we are already starting down this path. In terms of metropolitan areas, DFW added almost 125,000 people just in the 1 year. Houston added 110. Those are the top two. The 452, that's the rank order of the MSAs in, by size, by population. Austin and San Antonio, Austin grew by 3.2%. Percentage-wise, very, very, very rapid growth. They really can't accommodate that pace of growth. Austin can't handle it. I mean, they're already choking on I-35 and all the transportation as it is, not to mention the fact somewhere down the road, we actually have to provide drinking water for all these people. And Texas is running out of drinking water. And we can drink something else. Now, that's all right. But we're running out of the drinking water. So that's going to be a problem. Our population here in Texas, the 65, Texas is a young state. Median age is 2 or 3 years younger than the national average. Our percentage of people that are 65 or over, right now we're running about a little less than 10%, right at 9.9%. But look how that is growing. That's a significant number because, as you are well aware, when you turn 65 in most areas of Texas, you can put a ceiling on your property taxes for your primary residence. So in those counties that have a growing, aging population base, the property tax revenue stream is being limited or having a ceiling. And that's coming up in the legislature this session. I don't think anything will happen, but it's going to come up again the next session as well when we go through our time. And you know, it's just one of those things that's happened. Now, Bryan College Station, what does our population look like here? We got up to about 230,000 people by 2010. It looks like we'll be up to about 400,000 or better by 2040. Now, this is the state demographer's office official projection. Okay? And you can see that pattern of growth is going quite well. And I think, actually, they're a little conservative. I mean, you can just look at the slope of the line. Just look at the slope of the blue line. It looked like it was going up a lot faster, and they kind of flattened it out just a little bit. But that's just my opinion of the whole thing. All right, let's talk about housing just a little bit. Historically, housing has led into and out of most recessions. Almost every one of those, that you, when you saw the spaghetti graph there earlier, every one of those, the housing, and here read housing construction, new home construction, led into the recession if you look at it statistically, and then also rebounded first and then helped lead the rest of the economy up out of the recession. The reason being that so much happens when we build a new structure, when we build a new home, or we build a new non-residential structure, because it's all the other stuff in addition to just construction. It's all of the materials that have to be bought. It's all the appliances that have to be bought. All the carpeting has to be, all the people that have to do that. And it creates a lot of academic, multiplier effect of employment in terms of what other activities happen around them. This time around, housing has not been leading until about the last half of 2012. Housing started leading. Housing picked back up. Construction picked up. Sales picked up. Prices picked up. And now it's ironic because the housing market for the last 5 years has depended on the economy to recover, and the economy has depended on the housing market to recover, so neither one of them were doing anything. But now the housing market is showing that recovery and is starting to be the lead on the recovery. Let's look, for example, at home sales. The blue line are existing home sales. And you can see the last year or so, that general upward trend. Now, the two little blips in there, that was when we had the tax credit deals. The first time home buyer tax credit, and then the next year they expanded it for even multiple time buyers for people to buy. That was not sustainable. That was artificial. That was a tax deal. What's happening lately is, though, is now sustainable. This is happening because the markets have improved and is actually on their own improving in terms of sales. Now, the red line down below are new home sales. And you can see how dramatic the drop-off was in new home sales. But now you can see out there toward the end of that line how it's beginning to pick back up a little bit, and it's beginning to show considerable improvement despite the fact that the home builders in general are having great difficulty still in getting financing to build speculative homes and so forth. There's not that much speculative building going on, relatively speaking. But the home sale market has definitely improved. In terms of construction, the blue line here, and this gets back to my comments a little earlier about confidence in the market and confidence in the economy. That blue line is the NAHB, the National Association of Home Builders, it's a National Association of Home Builders. Wells Fargo do what they call a housing market index. That's the HMI. And it's really just they survey a whole bunch of builders around the country and say, hey, are things going well? Are they not going well? Are things up? Are they down? There's three or four or five questions. And it's basically what percentage of them answer that it's good or what percentage answer that it's bad. But it's a general index of the feeling, the confidence, the expectations of the home builders about the market and about their activity and what they're about. And what you can see here is that has taken a dramatic turn up here in the past, roughly in the past year. And what's also happening is that starts, that's the red or orange line there, the starts are beginning to reflect that attitudinal change on the part of the home builders. And if you talk to home builders here in Bryan College Station or around the state in Texas, they'll tell you the same thing. Hey, we had a pretty good year in 2012, and we're expecting 13 to be even better. And if we could just get the bankers to lend money, we'd be even better. I know there's some bankers in the audience. You get your shot at me later. But that's what's happening, and that blue line is one of those indicators I'm looking for of the turnaround in the psychology in the market of just how confident or the level of expectations, because what happens is perception becomes reality. If you think things are better and if you think things are getting better, then you act accordingly. You buy, you spend, you have a more positive attitude. What's been going on the last 5 years? We've had nothing but bad news. You've had to listen to guys like me tell you that things are bad and we're going to hell in a handbasket. And what happens when that confidence goes down? You act accordingly. You don't buy a house. You don't buy a car. You don't spend your money. You hoard it. You put it in the can, and bury it in the backyard or whatever. And that was what's going on. So here's one of those first indicators. Another indicator. Median price of single-family home across the United States. Hey, we're up. It's finally turned around. This is why all of the pundits are now saying that, yes, we are in the process of a housing recovery. And that does seem to be reasonable. It does look like that that's happening. It's a little tenuous. It's still susceptible to some downturns or some problems, but it does look like it's happening. And you can see there's that price bubble that everybody talked about. You can see it graphically here in the chart when it went up to $222,000 for the median home price. And you can see how we had such significant declines in 08, in 09, and then again in 11 even. But we're up about 5% for this year, and if we go up another 5% next year in 2013, which incidentally, right now, is a pretty good guesstimate of what to expect for this year, you know, we'll be back up over $182,000 for the national median home price. It's not back up to the 220-something, but quite frankly, that was an artificial number anyway. That was when you got money just by fogging a mirror. You know, nowadays, as all the realtors in the audience will tell you, you know, it's hell to sell a house now. And as a realtor, I mean, damn, all the buyers got to have a job. And they got to have income. And even worse, they got to have a down payment. That's the hard part, unless they're going to go FHA, because that's about the only job in town. Here's what median home prices look like if we graph it on a monthly basis. And the interesting part here is it looks like we're coming back to that long-term normal trend line. I put it in there for you, the 1968 to 1999 trend line. You know, 21 years, and that establishes sort of a pattern. You can see the price bubble, how it got off of that trend. And got into, you know, areas it shouldn't have gotten into. But it looks like we are getting our price increase levels at the national level back into that long term. And that's a good thing. That is a very good thing to have happen to us there. The Dodd-Frank, I mentioned it a minute ago. The regulatory requirements, are still out there. They came out about, 3 weeks ago and finally defined something called a qualified mortgage. They're going to define a qualified residential mortgage. All this has to do with if they securitize a loan or their susceptibility to having a loan put back. Whether or not Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or FHA will take the loan. They also came out with a definition on the due diligence requirement. The Dodd-Frank bill actually has in the law, it is law, you cannot lend money to someone unless you do due diligence to assure yourself that they have the ability to repay it. Duh. But here's the deal. If you lend money to somebody and subsequently they don't pay it back and you foreclose on the house, as a lender, you are now liable for a civil suit back from the borrower saying you should have never lent me the money in the first place. You should have known I couldn't pay it back, and you are liable, Mr. Lender, for making me that loan. Yeah. Okay, so they had to come up with, okay, what constitutes for the lender's protection, what constitutes doing adequate due diligence that they can say, yes, we looked at all the things we were supposed to look at, underwrote the loan, and you deadbeat, you didn't pay it back. And we're not liable. It also has to do with putbacks. It has to do with the reserve requirements. There's a whole lot of other technical stuff in there, but it's happening. Now, here's something else that's happening on the housing and demographic scene, and that is that, you know, Texas is rapidly growing, and we're not going to have a majority racial ethnic composition. Actually, we will. The majority will become, by 2030, the majority ethnic group will be the Hispanics. In 2000, we were 52% Anglo, 32% Hispanic. By 2030, those numbers reverse. We'll be 52% Hispanic, we'll be 32% Anglo. During the next couple of decades, the traditional minority groups are going to account for approximately two-thirds of the household growth and almost half of all the first-time home buyers out in the marketplace. And that's just simply going to be the answer to that. There are five primary home buyer groups that are now emerging. The first one is an interesting group because there have always been investors. There have been people who bought a house or bought a duplex or a triplex, and especially in a town community like College Station and Bryan, where we have such a large transient population, otherwise known as students, and they rent. But now we have not only the individuals, the quote-unquote the ma-and-pa investor, we now have funds. We got Blackstone's got about $500 million to $1 billion dedicated to going out and buying single-family homes. And they're only one of about five biggies with that kind of money, that kind of capital structure. And what they're doing is going out around the country and buying foreclosures, REOs, and short sale distressed properties on the theory that they're going to buy a lot of these single-family homes at distressed level prices, deep discounts. And they are either going to flip them, they're going to fix them up if they're empty and or need cosmetics, and sell them for a profit, or more than likely, they're going to turn around and rent them and have a national market of single-family rental properties, and then over time either collect the rents or sell them in the future when this rate of appreciation, as you just saw a minute ago, picks back up and maybe gets home prices back up again. So now we have fund investors. They're going to have a lot of fun. Anyway, we have what are now called boomerang buyers. I love it. I found this term. We have boomerang buyers. Think about it. 2008 is when we started having all the foreclosure issues. It's now 5 years later. Those people, a lot of them who simply lost their jobs, got overextended, lost their homes because of foreclosures, their credit scores and their credit capacity now is being recycled, and they're coming back into the market. For the last 5 years, they've been forced to be renters. But now they're coming back into the market because they want to be buyers, and they have the credit capacity. Fair Isaac Corporation, that's the FICA, they nobody knows how they do it. It's like sausage. You have no idea how that number is determined. I defy anybody in anywhere to tell us, because Fair Isaac won't tell you how they compute that. They give you a bunch of hooey-gooey, but that's another technical economics term. But they give you they give you this stuff, but you don't really know. But one of the things they have been doing, it used to be 7, 8, 9 years on a foreclosure, staying on your credit score and credit and almost killing your credit. It's now down to about 5. Because we had so much. So now we got these boomerang buyers. We got the move outs. We got that Gen Y group, that 18 to 34 age group. They've been renting. Or, as I've said to you before, there was a period of time here in 2009 and 10 where about a third of the people between the ages of 18 and 34 moved back in with parents or moved back in with family. They're now, after having gotten totally sick of that, they're ready to leave. They're ready to move out, and the parents are kicking them out. You know, don't let the door hit you on the way out. And they're looking to go out now and buy. They are, all the surveys of all that Gen Y group, particularly the 24 to 34-year-olds, want to be homeowners. They do want to take part in the American dream and buy a home and have that house. So they're the move out. The move downs, the empty nesters, those of us with this color hair that have hair. We're moving down. We're empty. We don't want the big house. We don't want the yard. I mean, I'm tired of mowing the yard. You know, we're going to move it down. We're going to take it and retire and do that. And then we have the move up. The people who are in the process of going up the economic chain, they're looking to buy bigger, better, whatever. They want to move over there. They want to build that house. They want to have. So we've got all of this going on. And incidentally, all of these have been pent up for the last 5 years. You know, if I wanted to move out or up or over, I couldn't do it because I couldn't sell the house I was in, or at least for the price I wanted, and I didn't have that opportunity to go buy the house that I wanted to go buy. So it's all been pent-up demand. Or I've been forced to be a renter because I didn't have the credit score, I didn't have the down payment, I didn't have the economic ability to be able to borrow the money because lending was so tight, credit was so tight, and I want that 3.5% mortgage, but I can't get out there to get it. So we're doing that. Now, and in the meantime, everybody who was in their house was hunkering down, refinancing to get the lower interest rate and taking advantage of that. But home prices are now increasing. Why are they increasing? They're more affordable. The prices have come down. And in fact, now the price to income and rent to price to rent ratios are back in jibe with each other where they ought to be. They got out of whack, now they're in whack. Another economics term. We're in whack. Okay? The old adage, you can afford to buy a house 2.5 times your income. Came out of the 50s and 60s out of FHA. The actual number right now is about 3 because of the interest rates being so low. You can actually afford to buy a house right now about 3.1 times your annual earnings. As a matter of fact, I would say this to all lenders. That's the only underwriting criteria you need to know. Do you have a job? How much is your income? And what's the price of the house you want to buy? Oh, it's less than 3? Okay, done deal. You can afford it. If it's 5 or 6 times your income, you can't afford it unless you're going to put about 50, 60, 70% down. End of story. That's your underwriting. You don't need to do all the rest of it. You don't need to sign the 14,000 pages that detail, you know, what you did in the third grade as part of the underwriting process. It just didn't need necessary. Household formations at a national level. The last 3 years, we have added fewer than 500,000 households a year. We went down to only 380,000 households nationally added net new households back in 2010. Normally, we add 1.2, 1.3 million new households each year. That's the demand for additional housing units. Well, if we're not creating households, that was all the students moving back with the parents. That was people doubling up, tripling up, moving in together, and staying in the same house or in the same apartment. That was the shrinkage. That's how you don't grow households and you have a cream. Well, now we're back up. Actually, I think in 2012, the estimate is we added right close to 1 million new households, probably 900,000 something, but right close to 1 million households. That's one of the reasons why the housing market picked up a little bit. It's also one of the reasons why the rental market is so strong, because a lot of those new households are going into the rental market on a short-term basis. Rents are rising. It's now much more economical in many cases to buy a house than to rent in terms of the monthly cost and the expected. There are fewer distress sales, so the statistics are easier. If we have fewer distress sales getting those lower prices, then the median price and the average price tends to pick back up. And incidentally, one of the fastest growing markets last year and a half has been the upper end market. The over 500,000 price homes have been one of the fastest growing. In Houston the other day, they had a home sale. I think it was for $11 million all cash. I mean, it just happens. Of course, oil and gas will do that. We have a historically low inventory of for sale homes. It's true here in the Bryan College Station area. It's true across Texas. It's true across the nation. Our inventory of for sale homes. I think people have just held back that were potential sellers thinking that expectations. I think prices will go up next year or the year after that. I don't need to sell this year. I'm not going to. I'm going to wait until it gets better. And then that's the expectations coming. Fannie Mae did a survey homeowners and what they thought was going to be the average change or the expected change in home prices. And you can see people are thinking home prices are going to go up 1.5 to 2%. That was a lot given the size and the degree of the survey done. Foreclosures are down, the distressed homes. Actually, I think it's because the lenders have figured out finally they lose more money foreclosing than they do if they do short sales, loan modifications, refinances, and so on. Wells Fargo figured it out a long time ago. You know. But they did. So the foreclosures came down. It's true also that in the judicial foreclosure states, they still have a huge backlog. Florida, New York, some of these states have a huge backlog of foreclosures. In New York State right now, the average time that it takes a lender to foreclose on a house and have the house sold at public auction is 1,090 days. 3 years. 3 years. Texas is incidentally the shortest time period at 189 days. We're a non-judicial state. Get the bums out. The process here is so much easier and less cumbersome. All right, annual Texas Hey, we're up 15%, almost 16% for the year in home sales. All right, the Texas housing market, yeah, we bounce back, and we bounce back real well. Thank you very much. Home sales are up. Home prices are up across the state a little better than 6%. And incidentally, it didn't make headlines last year, but we ended 2011 with the highest median home price we've ever had in the state. And we ended 12. We're going to end, now that we've ended 12, this is still a preliminary number till we get all the numbers in. It's even higher, 6% higher than that. This 157.7, which is that green bar over there, that's the highest median home price the state of Texas has ever recorded. Ever. So our home values and our home prices are indeed coming up. Now, does that mean every house in Texas went up 6%? You know, it's real spotty. Here in Bryan College Station, everywhere, there are pockets that are doing real, real well. There are pockets that aren't doing well. It is still a local market. So it's, you know, take it with a grain of salt of the generalizations, but we tend to report it this way. Our monthly inventory, homes for sale, I bracketed out between 5.5 and 7.5 months. We use 6.5 months as our measure of a balanced market. And if you're in that box somewhere, the market is more or less where it ought to be in that balance area. What you can see is that our inventory is way low. As a matter of fact, it's so low, our prices ought to be going up more than 6%. They ought to be going up 10 and 11 and 12% with inventory that low. Economics 101, you know. If you don't have very many to sell, you can sell them for higher prices. So it's like that. But the inventory is a little bit artificially low there. Single-family building has come back up. We're up about 20%. It's really about 21.5%, 22%. I don't have the final numbers here. You can see the green bars at about 80,000 units. These are based on permits. You can also see on the left-hand side, that was the 1980s, that dip in there during the 1980s. You can see we've gone through a similar dip here from 2006 and 5 through 2011. It does appear that the home building is going to be back. I think we'll have another year of somewhere between plus or minus 25% increase in home construction this year throughout Texas. We're still not where we're recovering. It's in the present tense. We're not recovered. We need to be in the ballpark of about 130,000 units a year. Maybe 140,000. You can look at the chart there and get a feel for that. We don't have to go all the way back up to that artificial peak to be recovered, but we need to be back up. We need another about 60% on top of the 80,000 to be really recovered and to be doing that well. Multifamily construction is also doing extremely well. That's because the rental market is doing well. Those households moving back out, they're still renting. They're renting apartments. Houston, Dallas, Austin, here, we've been having construction, multifamily construction, you know, just as fast as we can get them built. It's like everything else we've ever done in this state. It'll be a pendulum. We'll probably swing a little too far on the construction side before it balances out completely. But every developer will tell you his deal's different and his deal's going to make it despite everybody else. But that's okay. Incidentally, on the far left-hand side of this chart, you can see what an industry looks like that falls off the cliff again. That was back during the 80s when we went from that real high number down to virtually nothing. But we're up about 60% this year, and we'll probably be up another 30-40% next time. You know, what I've been trying to tell you is that there are different perspectives, and there are just different ways of looking at things, and sometimes just things you never think about, and you have to look at it from a different perspective. I mean, take, for example, Mount Rushmore. You've all seen the familiar Mount Rushmore. But have you ever considered what it looks like from the other side? So I'm just trying to give you different perspectives of what's going on. All right, College Station is generally following, unlike with the employment, we are following the trend for the housing market. The Bryan College Station housing market is doing everything very similar to what we've seen. Home sales are up over 17% this past year. Ask any of the realtors in the audience. I saw Jason earlier. This past year was a great year. It started out well this year. January is up. We didn't have the kind of the degree of seasonal fall off this fall and winter that we've had in past years. So we're looking good. Home sales are interesting, and if we go up much more in 2013 and into 2014, we'll start exceeding those peaks that we saw back during the really, really good years back in 6 and 7. It wouldn't be too surprising. And you can see how the home sales on a monthly trend is above the trend line already. So it looks like that we can safely say our housing market, in terms of sales, has most definitely recovered and is doing very, very well. And it bodes well for our future. A lot of things, good things happen in the economy when we have home sales. The month's inventory, we aren't down as much as what you saw there for the state. In fact, we're just now coming down from having excess inventory when we had the slowdown in sales back in 2010 and 11. We're now back down to being in that categorization or in that box of what we would call into a normal level. It's at the high end of the box, but it's still not too bad. Median home price wasn't up as much as the state. The sales volume was up, but the median price wasn't up as much. That's because also our first-time buyer market and our lower-priced home market didn't get hit as hard. It was stayed relatively strong. So some of this is just the arithmetic of the calculation of that of the medians and the averages, but it'll be like that. I think that 2012, we're still going to be up about 2.5%, maybe close to 3% by the time we close out the books for the year of 2012, which is still good. What you see is a consistent pattern of relative price stability and price increase without excessive increase and without excessive decline. And that is a good, stable market. We were flat from 10 and 11, we're pretty flat, but that may be our only hiccup, as it were, coming along on this score. I think 2013, barring any unforeseen externality, assuming the university doesn't get really drastically cut back, some other problems happen. And what you were hearing earlier this morning, all of this with the medical center and the medical development and the increase in the healthcare industry in the Bryan College Station bodes well for 2 and 3 and 4 years down the way in terms of additional jobs. Some of that won't happen immediately. It won't happen in the next 6 months. But over the next year, over the next 2 years, over the next 3 years, we're going to start seeing that private sector employment start picking up in the healthcare and in other areas as well. Median home price is down just a little bit in terms of the trend, but you can see how closely, if you can see it well here on the graph, how that red line is following the green. The green line just sort of a linear trend line, and how closely it's followed it until about the last year or so. And I think we'll start coming back. The long-term trend, the trend is always to go to long-term norm, and we will get there as we get there. The distribution of sales, the green bars are where sales were, the percentage of sales by price category in 2000. The blue bars are the price categories in 2012. And what you can see in 2012, nearly 2 out of 3 sales were between $100,000 and $250,000, compared to less than half of the sales back in 2000 in that price category. So it's slowly progressing. It's that steady, constant going up. The home construction is really almost back to norm. I mean, this is one of the markets or one of the areas in the housing sector in College Station, Bryan, that we can say is pretty close to norm. What you'll see is that our estimate for 2012 is just shy of 800 units being built. And I've drawn some circles. You can see that in that period of time, 2002-2003, that was those excessive, the high bars there. But what you'll see is, you know, from 1997 through 2001 and again from 2008 through 2010, being somewhere between 750 to 800 units construction is quote-unquote kind of normal for this market and this market area in terms of what we build and how and the pace of construction. And what I'm hearing from the home builders is they're expecting 13 to be an even better year. They're expecting 13 to be an even better year. So it could well be that we'll come back up and get into that 800 to 900 unit bracket, if you will, and start seeing some increase. And that will have multiplier effects in the local economy. Appliances have to be bought. Carpets have to be bought. Painting has to be done. Outdoor furniture gets bought. You know, all of these things will happen. The economic multiplier effect of this construction is really, really good. So while we were down in 11, we're up about 30% in 12, and it's extremely important that we maintain that going on. Multifamily, hey, you know, we're building apartments. Everywhere you look, they're being built, right? And we keep filling them up. And we keep getting the rents for them. I don't know how long that'll continue, but it'll as long as we keep adding students. And between Blinn and TAMU, what, we've got nearly 75,000 students in this town. Something like that. It's a lot. You know, you can always tell the difference between when school's in session and when school isn't in session. You know, we all enjoy it. You know, that Christmas period, middle of the summer, late August. Boy, great time to be here. Incidentally, you can also see what we went through back in the 80s when you go from something to nothing. You know, we never have gotten to nothing, but we'll see that, and it was up about 17%. I think that's going to steady out this year, maybe go up a little bit, not as much as the single family. All right, so what are we looking at? Just let's wrap this thing up for the U.S. We started a rebound in the national economy, really, last fall. But it's moving kind of slow. It's going to move through 2013. 13 may still be the slowest year. By 14 and 15, we're really starting to look for the national economy to start showing a lot more robust recovery than what we've seen so far. Maybe still a year away. Home sales and construction, car sales, retail sales, they're picking up. They'll keep the GDP positive, but it won't be exorbitant. More people are working, but we're not adding jobs. That's going to be the conundrum for the United States for the next 40, 50 years. We figured out ways to be productive without putting people to work. We can run our industries with technology, with machines, with robotics, with a whole lot of other things, and be just as productive as we've always been, but we don't need people to have to be on job to do it. It's not very labor intensive. It's far more capital intensive and technology intensive. Interest rates are going to continue low. I don't think they'll stay at the current level for too much longer. I give it maybe 5-6 months. By the end of the year, we'll drift up a little bit. I'm talking about mortgage interest rates and car loan rates and general interest rates across the board. Fees and costs to the lenders are going to have to be passed through. Some risk is going to have to be passed through. So get it while the getting's good. On the other hand, over the next couple of 3 years, we're not going back yet to the days of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12% home loans yet. But maybe. 5 years of negativity is being slowly replaced by positive expectations. That may be the most important thing going on right now, is the attitudinal change, the psychology in the market of people thinking things are going to get better. It is also true that we now are beginning to think in terms of inflation, of prices going up. When you're thinking with inflationary expectations, if you think the prices are going up, you tend to act accordingly and you buy today, because if you wait till tomorrow, it costs you more. As opposed to back in 08 and 09, you had deflationary expectations. Prices were going down. If prices are going down, just like the Great Depression, you don't buy. You wait for the prices to keep going down further. You didn't buy the car because you knew next year General Motors or Ford was going to give you a better deal than they're going to do this year. It's reversed now, so the psychology is much different. We have credit capacity again. We still have a lot of political risk that is still out there in the market that we haven't gotten rid of. I don't know how we're going to get rid of it. We're just going to have to learn to live with it. And the regulatory risk. It's also the non-elected agency regulators writing the rules and regulations that are controlling as much of what happens as the guys in Washington or the guys in Austin who are making the laws. Because it's the regulators who, after the law is passed, get to decide what the law says and then write the rules and regulations that they think need to be written according to their interpretation of what the law actually says. Texas. How are we looking in Texas and Bryan College Station? What's our downside? Most of everything I've told you this morning, I hope you are taking it, is very positive for both the state and for Bryan College Station. The outlook is most definitely positive. What could go wrong? What's the risk? Well, there is always the risk of some kind of national or global occurrence that causes us to go into another national or global recession. And we're not independent of that yet. Texas is not an independent nation yet. But so you know, we would get caught up in that. The other thing is oil and gas. One of the reasons Texas has done so well the last 3-4 years has been the strength of the oil and gas and the energy industry. That industry still is relatively strong. Price of oil is probably going to be in that $90 a barrel somewhere. Price of natural gas is our real upside. Right now it's too low. At around $2 an MCF, it's too low for all of the fracking and all of the other kind of extraction activity. So a lot of those wells and a lot of the development that was going on in Barnett Shale, Haynesville, and elsewhere, that's all come to a halt. Eagle Ford is still going. Permian's still going because that's all an oil play. Also, if we get natural gas production, if we get the price back up, we actually become a natural gas exporter instead of a natural gas importer. Ironically, the last three facilities that were built on the coast were all built for liquefied natural gas, LNG, to be imported into the country. We're actually going through the process now, one of them trying to get a permit to be able to export. It's much better to be a seller than a buyer. And we could do that if we get natural gas prices. And that would also resurrect all of the shale production for gas. All of the shale production right now for oil is still going on. That's what's happening in North Dakota, the Bakken field. It's happening somewhat in West Virginia, Western Pennsylvania. That's the field over there. That's the biggest one in the country, incidentally. That's a lot bigger than the Eagle Ford and the Permian. Is over in Western New York, Western Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and on down through there. Much, much bigger. It helps that New York has prohibited drilling and fracking. Good for them. Let the Yankees freeze. Population growth is going to continue. It's going to be even stronger. The bait, of course, is jobs, because jobs are not being created around the country. But we are here, and that's going to keep going. New construction is going to rebound. We're a long way from recovered, but 2013 is going to be that second year in the recovery process. And generally, your second and third years are good years, so look forward to it. The university is going to expand sometime or another, and of course, we'll enjoy really another good year in the SEC, right? Whoop. Okay. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it very much. I've enjoyed being here.